Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. After a couple of weeks of break, Majlis is back in session, and today we are here to do a quick state's update about the situation of forced labor in the latest cotton harvest in Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan is known for its notorious practice of forcing its citizens to pick cotton against their will. At the times, this used to involve over a million people, about which the authorities have been rigorously criticized by the international community. But after the change in administration 2 years ago, the new government in Uzbekistan has promised to end this practice. And for that promise, they earned lots of goodwill and praise from around the world. As another harvest season has just ended, we are here to revisit the cotton fields of Uzbekistan to discuss how much the government has been good in its promise, what changed and what remains to be changed in this highly inhumane practice. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Umida Niyazova, director of Uzbek German Forum for Human Rights, an NGO which monitors forced labor in Uzbekistan's cotton fields. Umida is joining us from Berlin. We have Jonas Astrup, International Labor Organization's Chief Technical Advisor in Uzbekistan. Jonas is in Tashkent. Laziz Omilov, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. Ozotlik's reporting project on cotton called Pachtagram is in Prague, along Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So we also invited the Uzbek authorities to join the discussion. I did not get any response to my inquiries, and thanks, Jonas, for your efforts to get them on board. I think we will continue trying. So anyhow, I just wanted to say that we are eager to hear from them. So let's move on. As I said, another harvest season has been just concluded in the absence of the authorities in the show. Let's start with you, Jonas. How did the harvest go this year, and how did the issues related to the forced labor were handled?
I think that 2018 was a really exciting year for Uzbekistan, but perhaps it was also a test for the country. Uh-huh. I think when President Mirziyoyev stood up in September 2017 in front of the UN General Assembly and committed the country to work with the ILO and to eradicate child and forced labor, he made a very public commitment. Right. He didn't have to do that. So 2018 was an exciting year. If we look at the I'm just going to talk very, very high level, and we can go into more detail. I'm sure the other participants also have thoughts and views on these things. I think what we saw in 2018 was continued clear political commitment. So if you followed the public announcements, the speeches, the TV shows, the articles in newspapers and so on, you saw a clear commitment coming from the leadership of the country to eradicate child and forced labor. There's no ambiguity in the messaging. In terms of specific measures taken, we saw a significant increase in wages for cotton pickers. We saw a very significant awareness-raising campaign to make people aware of their labor rights and to promote the feedback mechanisms, the hotlines that people can contact if they have questions or concerns or cases. Those hotlines in 2018 handled well over 2,500 cases that were investigated by the Ministry of Labor and the Federation of Trade Unions. And almost 200 officials were punished and either dismissed, demoted, or fined. I think those are sort of quite key developments. The result, as we saw it from the ILO monitoring, our preliminary findings, we saw a 46% reduction in forced labor in 2018. Now, I think it's really
That's
important.
A very specific number, so we will get into this, where you get this
we'll
number.
We'll get into this, yeah. But I just want to make absolutely clear that mm-hmm. we are in no way saying that there's no forced labor in Uzbekistan.
Sure.
There are still, in 2018, 180,000 people that were forced to pick cotton during the harvest.
Okay. Laziz, Luna said they have seen continued political commitment by the Uzbek authorities to eradicate this phenomena in Uzbekistan. I am more interested in how this commitment played out on the ground. So you and your colleagues at the Azatlik have been monitoring the situation throughout the season. So instead of me repeating your reports, let me invite you to talk about some of the highlights that you came across this year when it comes to the forced labor.
So yes, we also could notice that there was like big state governmental campaign against forced labor. We could see that in newspapers, we could see that on social media and everywhere. So basically there were these hotlines, as Jonas is saying, everything is correct. But what we noticed in practice on the ground, two differences that we noticed to speak generally. First, we didn't see kids being taken to the fields. And we also saw that the government or the local government became more responsive to complaints and problems report. But again, I'm talking only about the cases that we were covering, because physically we were not able to report everything. But those cases that we were investigating and we were publishing, normally the prosecutor's office was coming to us, talking to us, and sending there the team and really trying to talk to those people. They were finding those people and trying to talk. We had a case once when two guys reported that they were from Angren, forcefully were taken to the cotton field. We published that, and probably 2 days after that, if I'm not mistaken, prosecutor's office contacted us back and said, look guys, we saw those guys, we talked to them, everything is resolved, this guy is sent back home. But once we started contacting that guy again, he said, yes, well, they sent only me home. All my friends and colleagues are still there. And now I'm afraid because those guys, they said, okay, we will talk to you after the cotton finishes. So I would join what Jonas is saying, that the government is sort of trying. But in fact, the real business stays with the local government, which I will try to cite our followers who is saying that local government is sabotaging what president is doing.
Okay. Omida, anything to add on this? We heard somewhat opposing perspectives from Laziz and Yunus, and I know you have been working on a comprehensive report on this. So what were your main findings from this year's harvest and where we are in the matter of forced labor compared to the previous year or years?
With regard to the recent harvest, we found forced labor remained a systematic problem. The government continued to impose cotton quota on regions and districts and imposing responsibility to fulfill this on officials. And in turn, these officials imposed quotas on public institutions, the bank, enterprises, businesses, to send employees or to pay for pickers. And we also found that teachers and healthcare workers in this year's cotton harvest, they participated, also had been sent to pick cotton, but on the less scale than in previous years. And we see the real kind of problems that, for example, with the onset of the cold weather, the number of volunteers has declined. And despite the increasing of payment for pickers, which was good, like up to 10 cents per 1 kilogram at the end of the season, it was not being enough to attract a sufficient number of voluntary workers.
So, Bruce, I guess, we had a similar discussion 2 years ago, aside from the rhetoric by the authorities, promises of reform, etc. So what did change and what remains to be changed the way you see it?
Certainly, wages did go up. That was good. And there was, I think everyone agrees that there was less forced labor in Uzbekistan's cotton fields in 2018 than we saw in previous years. The question for me, all of last year was, we saw that when officials got caught for forcing people into the cotton fields, that they were punished. When this was made public, they were punished. Now, Amita mentioned that there still keeps the quotas on. And the chain of command to me is not entirely clear. I'm trying to figure out, the government, we know that the top people say, don't send people into the fields, we won't stand for it. At the same time, somebody way up in government is saying, but we still need to get X amount of cotton from this region, that region, the other regions. And local officials still seem to interpret that as meaning that one way or another, they have to get that cotton in. And that includes conscripting people into the fields if that is what happens. So I see that people get punished when they get caught. Now, my question has been all along here, how clear are these orders about not putting people in the fields? Is this something that officials in Tashkent say? And as long as people, local officials, can get away with sending people into the fields and getting them to pick cotton, and if nothing's spoken about it, then nothing changes. But the deal is, if you get caught, the government in Tashkent will not own up to you being part of any effort they've signed off on, meaning the government, you know, Mirziyoyev, other people say, we told you not to do that. But behind closed doors, they're also saying, but you have to get it done any way that you can get it done. You know, are these people, local officials, being made scapegoats because they're the ones that are caught are the ones that punished, but we know that others are not caught and still seem to be doing the same thing that they had been doing under Karimov for all those years? So it's really unclear to me. The government's against it.
Bruce, do you want Jonas to respond this? I mean, probably he knows what's going on behind the doors.
Yeah, sure. I'd like to hear his opinion.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Bruce, and thanks, Mohammed. Well, I don't know if I know everything that's going on. Let me try and explain from our perspective and what we saw in this year's harvest. There were clear instructions to not force people. I don't think that there is a sort of closed-door discussion. We, as the ILO, took part in all the cabinet of ministers' meetings. We are part of these discussions, and I really genuinely think that the instructions to the local government are clear. Now, at the same time, we should not underestimate the pressure that's on the local government. You know, cotton is still a significant crop for the country, and there are quotas in place. And of course, those targets have to be met. So it's a challenging situation, and I don't envy the local government officials to deliver on under these conditions necessarily. But I think there is one issue, and this is one of our key recommendations that we have already submitted to the government at our roundtable in November. There is the issue of asking people to provide replacement picker fees. There is an issue about asking people for money, which we believe, and as far as we can see, is a significant driver in asking the wrong people, quite frankly, because the kind of people that you would attract with higher wages are people who need the extra income, people who are unemployed, you know, housewives, women in rural areas, people who are motivated by the opportunity to make money during the harvest. But the practice of asking somebody to pick cotton, and if they decline, then say, well, then you have to pay me $100, for example. A student or a woman in a rural area can't pay $100.
Of course, yeah.
So there's no incentive to ask these people to pick if you really are looking for, how can I say, you're really looking for money rather than pickers. And so we have made a crystal clear recommendation from the monitoring in 2018. We've already communicated this to the government at the roundtable. Prohibits any type of payment or fees to be paid in relation to the cotton harvest in 2019.
Okay. So before I forget, earlier, Jonas, you mentioned that there was a 46% reduction in number of people forced to pick cotton this year. Umida, in terms of numbers, scope and size, was there any change this year?
We assume that less people were mobilized, possibly mobilized to send cotton, because this year there was less cotton produced. But nevertheless, I would say that we think that there are serious shortcomings in the ILO's methodology and conclusions. And there is a third-party monitoring evaluation, which was published last year, and which was published by Professor Christian Lasslet. And I will not repeat, but it's a whole report which says that the contradictory and inaccurate information in the ILO's harvest report of 2017 indicates deficiencies in the field of quality control of the study. And I wanted to return to the question of who are responsible for this and behind this systemic mobilization of people to pick cotton. For example, I opened now the document which says this is the order of the head of Uzbek Metallurgic Combinat in Bekabat City from September 19. And it says, on the organization of the harvesting of raw cotton in 2019, which starts with the world on the basis of protocol number 32676 of the Cabinet of Ministers of Republic of Uzbekistan, and decision of Hakim of the Tashkent to assist Bekaba district in harvesting cotton in 2018. So it's a whole big order. And this order and this protocol was not published. And we don't know what's written there. But we know we interviewed employees of this Bekaba metallurgy combinate who were told us that they were ordered to pick cotton and there was no any chance for them to refuse because they don't want to conflict with the directors and just go to Picatan. Also, before I not forget, I wanted to mention that, you know, this year, almost every day, the local media reported about the punishment or dismissal of Hakim, prosecutors, police chiefs, tax inspectors for poor organizing harvesting or
What does that mean? Yeah, what does that mean?
What that mean, for example, this means that these regions were not good enough to fulfill the cotton quota. Oh. Let me give you example. For example, Tashkent region was the worst with the cotton quota. And as a result, we saw there was a published that all the 22 heads of cities and districts of Tashkent region, the Hokims, they have been punished. So the orders in the public, they don't say that we punishing Hokims for not fulfilling the quota. It says like general for the poor organizing cotton harvest. But nevertheless, if we look this table, the information of cotton harvested every day, we see that the regions with the bad results, heads of that regions, they were punished.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also, and let me also note that the ILO is claiming and Minister of Labor is claiming that more than 200 officials, they've been punished for using forced labor. The problem is we cannot confirm this information because the list of these officials, when, who were published, for what and how, it was never been published.
Okay, so we luckily we have ILO here. And also, Yunus, in terms of numbers, I think what Umida said, there's a window for you to respond on that. Regardless of numbers, I hear both of you think that there was a reduction in number of people being forced to collect cotton this year. So just quickly, your response on this.
Yes, absolutely. Let me respond very specifically to the issue about punishment for forced labor violations. So I just got the latest numbers last week, in fact, from the ministry, because, of course, some of these cases are still ongoing after the harvest. So the exact number is 184 cases across the country, specifically officials being punished for forced labor violations. Nothing else, nothing about quotas. Nothing about anything else. This is specifically about forced labor. I have the list with the names. I have the distribution across the provinces. We just need to find a good way to share this. I don't think it would be very ethical for me to put up a list with 200 names of individuals in the public domain. I certainly think we need to think about how we go about sharing the identity or to provide as much information as we can about these cases without violating people's rights to privacy and so on. When we issue our report, I will make a commitment today that we will include that list in a way that we don't disclose people's identities. But we could perhaps go do it by region, by province, by district, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, Umida, you're more than welcome to disagree with our findings and you're more than welcome to have concerns or questions about our methodology. But it would be good if you were specific, and I'd be very happy to answer any of your questions or any of your concerns. I can tell you that the 2017 monitoring was very different from the 2018 monitoring. So if you are thinking about the 2017 harvest, I think things have changed significantly in the way we do monitoring. So we, for example, don't do monitoring with any type of government or trade union officials in 2018. There are no FTUU representatives on the ILO monitoring team. There is only an international ILO monitor and a local human rights activist. Also, I can tell you that I can say that there is no attempt whatsoever to restrict or influence our monitoring. All visits were unannounced and unaccompanied. And if you have any questions or any thoughts on this, I'm more than happy.
Yeah, I think that's the topic of discussion for another Majlis or some other platform that we might get back to it.
I'm sorry, Muhammad. I'm sorry. I just want to quickly respond that actually we prepared the list of the questions regarding the ILO methodology, and I am glad that Jonas has expressed his willingness to respond. And great. This list of questions will be sent to him tomorrow.
Sounds
thank you, Mira, and I commit to responding to that. Thank you.
Sounds like a deal. Sounds like a deal. Thank you very much. We spoke about the punishments. A couple of you have raised that. Let me bring some other new thing that I have seen this year that you all might have seen, some of those viral pictures in which farmers were forced to stand in ditches filled with cold water or were forced to run carrying heavy stones as a humiliating means of punishment for their failures in fulfilling tasks given by the authorities. How those pictures can be explained, Jonas, if the authorities are so strict in punishing violators of the rules that they put forward in terms of cotton picking?
Yes, I think I know which picture you're referring to. And I think for the benefit of the listeners to the podcast, I mean, I assume that you're referring to the picture of people standing in a stream of water. Is that correct?
Yep. One is that, and the other was I have seen a couple of farmers carrying heavy stones and running, and that was taking place in front of a local administration.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's important and it's not important, but those pictures were actually not taken in the context of the cotton harvest. The situation was around irrigation for wheat production, and so the people on the picture that are standing in the stream are, in fact, not farmers, but officials from local institutions. And it's the situation, not to go into too much detail, but it's around the dispute around whether or not there were water and irrigation available for wheat, some wheat fields in that area. That's, of course, completely unacceptable to treat people in that way. And that view was shared by the government, by the president, by the prime minister, and others. And as a result, the individual, the senior government official responsible for that was demoted from a very senior government official as Minister of Agriculture and Deputy Prime Minister. He was, in a very public way, fired from that position. And he's now reappeared as a local official in a district in Jisak, which I think it's important to stress that those pictures are not the norm. When people in Uzbekistan saw those pictures, they were stunned and appalled, and it had consequences for the responsible individual.
Okay. So authorities, have promised to change the practice of forced labor, and I want to believe that they are genuine in what they say. So how much their actions correspondent with their promise? What are their challenges, and are they in a position to cope with this challenge? So we will continue the discussion talking about these and many other issues very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. I'm joined by Umida Niyazova, Director of Uzbek-German Forum for Human Rights, Jonas Astrup, ILO's Chief Technical Advisor in Uzbekistan, Laziz Omilov, the Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek Services Cotton Monitoring Project, Paktagram, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Uwazi. I am Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. And we are doing a state's update about the forced labor in Uzbekistan's cotton fields. So it slipped from my tongue twice in the first half of the discussion that the fact that there is no children in the cotton fields is a positive development. Also positive is the Uzbek authorities' willingness to talk about these issues. So there is some sort of progress. Manuel, we also agree that the forced labor remains a serious issue as a whole. So on the question of how much of an issue is this, the size and scope of it, how much opinions differ between the NGOs in Uzbek authorities on some of the underlying problems and the way it needs to be solved? What are some of the main points of agreement and disagreement with the authorities? Umida, let's start with you. Umida, are you with us? Yunus?
Yes, I can hear you, Mohamed.
I don't hear Umida. So let's start with this.
Yes, would you like me to start and then maybe Umida will join us again?
Sure.
In terms of numbers and data, we believe, and this is seems to be confirmed by the government, that approximately 2.6 million people picked cotton in 2018. That the official number that I've seen is 2.63 million to be exact. I'm not aware of anybody challenging that number. What is really interesting to look at is to see the different categories of pickers that make up these 2.6 million people. So you have farm workers and their families. That is one category of cotton pickers. Then you have a second group of pickers, which are self-organized group, typically women, very productive. You could call them top professional pickers. The third group is unemployed people. So Uzbekistan has approximately 600,000 young people joining the labor market every year. And that's a challenge and an opportunity for the country. But it has to create 600,000 new jobs every year to meet that challenge. And that is very difficult. So there is a significant number of unemployed people in Uzbekistan that also participate in the harvest.
Yeah,
that is the third group.
Fourth
group and last group are employed people, so staff of institutions and companies. Those are the four categories, and the total number is 2.6 million.
But where your opinion differs with the authorities on these issues, on these problems, the way to solve it?
You know, the thing is, Mohamed, I really don't think that our opinion differs so much. When we presented data to the government and we said we believe that there's 180,000 people who were forced to pick cotton in 2018, there was no disagreement.
Okay, so let's look into this from the NGO's perspective. Umida, I guess you are back. I saw your microphone was muted earlier. So when you compare your checklist in terms of the problems, the underlying problems, or the approach towards solutions, so what are some of the main points of agreement and disagreement with the authorities?
With regard with the numbers, so it's 2 years ago, we estimated that around 1 million, so something like 30% of people harvested cotton, they'd been sent to work because they'd been the employees of different public organizations, and they'd been forcibly sent to pick cotton. And we counted these numbers from the documents we had, from the interviews we conducted, where people usually from different regions, people who don't know each other, of course, they told us the same thing, that around 30% of the employees of the staff, they have to go to pick cotton. And this year, we found that many employees, like even the head of the organizations, like tax inspectors or banks, or even police office, chief of the policeman, they've been requested to hire one, sometimes up to five people to send them to pick cotton and pay them themselves, like from their own pocket. And my question also was to Jonas, that what percentage of, let's say, these voluntary pickers were hired by government employees, so, and were paid through extorted money?
Wow. Is there any answer for that? I mean, if there's any quick, Yunus, please.
Yes. Let me be very specific. If somebody is asking you to pick cotton and you don't want to pick cotton, but you're being asked to pay for somebody else, that is a case of forced labor, in that you have a negative consequence by declining to perform the work. So that is, by ILO definition, a case of forced labor. Now, if somebody is being paid and voluntarily goes and pick cotton, it is not a case of forced labor. I don't have Umida is saying there are cases of people being asked to pay others to go and pick cotton. Yes, We are certainly aware of those people, of those cases. I don't have a specific number or a percentage. I mean, simply that would require a different approach in terms of monitoring. In that, okay. Those type of people would not be found in the cotton fields, because they would obviously have paid others to pick instead. I don't have a specific number, but we know it's a problem, and the government agrees with that.
Okay, so Bruce, the NGOs, ILO, and the authorities all seems to be in agreement in one thing, that there's a problem, it needs resolution. And in terms of what is a problem or what should the approach be, they stand in a different corner of the page. So how much of a problem is this when we are talking about the solution?
Well, that's going to be difficult to quantify, certainly. Yeah. You know, what I would say, I suppose, was that we know that this has been a practice in the country for a long time, and you know, the saying, old habits die hard. So there is clearly an effort to try to remedy this situation, and it starts with the president declaring that he doesn't want any more forced labor in the country. Now, how you're going to hold everyone accountable for this kind of, Uzbekistan's got a big population. How are you going to hold everyone accountable for these misdeeds, I'll say? How are you going to identify them? How are you going to get the message through that people shouldn't have to pay to not go to the cotton field, so that money can be handed over to someone who is willing to go to the cotton field? I mean, these are tough questions. It would require really the kind of monitoring that there's simply not enough manpower on the ground to do that. You know, I would, to go back to the picture of the guys with the stones and stuff, that I think, that obviously that's a horrible story. But for me, what was really encouraging about that is that someone was willing to film that and post that on the internet. And to the best of my knowledge, although Laziz would know far better than me, I don't think the people that posted the video were ever punished, certainly, and they might not have even been looking for them. So there seems to be a sense on the part of the civilian population that what Mirziyoyev said is how it should be. Maybe that is the truth. And, you know, I think it's really going to be up to because again, this, like I said, this has been in the system for a long time. This is going to have to be partially, if not mostly, a grassroots kind of movement where people show that they're not afraid to film or report these kind of abuses, so that they can get their own message across. That might end up being one of the best ways of solving this, and that we didn't see 3 or 4 years ago.
Let's bring on Laziz here. Laziz, you are running the entire project based on the reports that you get from people, citizen journalists there. So how you evaluate the activeness of people reporting about the issues, the type of issues that Bruce just mentioned about people being punished standing in the ditches, or the other violation of human rights in the cotton fields? Is it more, less compared to previous years?
Certainly less. This year we received less reports, but still there were a lot of them, but relatively less than it was previous year. And again, what we could notice, like, the local government was really going to the person who was like reporting to us, trying to talk to him or to her, resolve the problem. And the final thing, what they were telling them, because we are getting this information from direct source who was reporting to us and whose information was confirmed to us, prosecutor's office, state prosecutor's office, giving like the order to the local prosecutor's office, go and talk to them. The moment they come there, they resolve their problem, and the last thing what they say, next time if you have something to say, don't tell it to Ozodlik, tell it to us, and we'll resolve it. But what we see from the reports of people messaging us, they say, we try to complain, but nothing is resolved. We try to complain, and eventually our complaints, they come back again to the regional government, who comes and says, why are you complaining? Well, but again, like you guys were talking about the remedy and about more global things in cotton harvest. And while we were talking about like local government and central government, and that probably central government doesn't know what local government does and blah, blah, blah. But again, there are plenty of systematic problems in terms of agriculture, and including in cotton sphere. For example, we had several cases in 2018 when farmers first were giving money from the bank, loans to cultivate cotton. But the moment when the government started understanding that the cotton plan is not going to be fulfilled this year, they start, like, normally these loans to farmers were given on 3% interest rate for 14 months, which is like 1 year, 2 months. But once the government started understanding that they are not getting the plan, they started trying to get money back from those farmers earlier. And we had those cases and we published them and they were confirmed as well. And they started sort of getting money from farmers earlier, which resulted in bankruptcy for those farmers because like they cannot pay their loans anymore. They became bankrupt because still farmers are connected and they are not independent from hakims. And that's the biggest problem, because while central government is saying that we are doing everything to eradicate the forced labor and blah, 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 in fact, on the ground, hakims are still the biggest bosses. And whatever they say, farmers must do that. And we again had so many cases when farmers wanted to plant something else, but they were forced to plant the cotton, even though the law says that there are certain areas, and Mirziyoyev was saying during his public speech that we are cutting the amount of land given for the cotton production. But in fact, we had tens of those stories when hakims were forcing farmers to plant the cotton, even though that land was not for the cotton. On the top of that, the biggest problem in 2018, like I'm talking about systematic things. So in 2018, when all this started happening, government didn't give any subsidies, any support to those farmers. Like some of them faced the bankruptcy because of this policy.
I guess I was following from your reports that a couple of farmers were also ended up in jail for not being able to pay back.
And what is more is that we had the cases when MIB, this is the organization created within the prosecutor's office, that guys were going to the houses of farmers. And even though they still had some time to fulfill their cotton plan and so on, they were coming to their houses, taking their carpets, TVs, personal things, you know, taking their cars. We reported like recently the case when the farmer lost his almost new car just because he couldn't fulfill the plan. And he's like, yeah, I want to give up the farming and I want to get away from this. But now like I'm having problems and they are sort of pressuring me. We have several such cases and we can see that systematically hakims are still like bosses there. And I think the same thing applies to the heads of public organizations, to the head of state organizations. When hakim wants something, they cannot say no. And we heard many cases when those people were saying, we are just afraid to say no. We cannot. We are like soldiers. We are given the order and we do that.
You know, what the Laziz was talking about kind of brings back me to some of the bigger questions. Like, you know, these are just few of many systematic problems that we are talking about when we look into Uzbekistan as agriculture sector. And again, this is not just one region that's facing this challenge. This is in Tashkent, this is Jizzakh, and many other places, the same complaints are coming. So it, you know, raises a question in my mind is, let's imagine that Uzbek authorities genuinely want to resolve this issue. So are they really qualified to do this? Do they understand the problem?
Well, that's a good question. The people that we engage with certainly understand the labor problems. And I think it's let me try and answer your question and also some of Lassis's points. I think it's there is, in fact, a government strategy to reduce, eliminate the role of the government and hakims in cotton production. So there is a deliberate strategy to put in place, get private investors in to privatize the cotton industry. And the vehicle that's being piloted currently are so-called textile clusters, where investors will take over the role of the government, if you like, for a certain area and move, buy the cotton from the farmers. There are different models that vary. It would probably be too detailed to get into that now. But the overall idea is that moving up the value chain, manufacture textile and garments, rather than exporting raw cotton, and have private investors run the industry rather than the government. Now, that is happening. Those textile clusters are being implemented.
But I mean, the outcome is not changing the reality on the ground. You know, that's why it raises question to me, like, I mean, are they really qualified to handle this issue?
Do you mean to grow cotton or
to deliver the promise that they are making to people?
Yes. I firmly believe that the government is clear in its commitment. And I think they are coming back to the beginning of the discussion about the, how can you say, the contrast between the central government and the local government and some of the dynamics we're seeing there, I definitely think that the strategy of the government to eradicate forced labor is sound. I think the strategy to reduce cotton production by 20% by 2020, the strategy to put in place textile clusters and get private investors in rather than having the government have a quota system as it's the case now, I think those are the right type of instruments. So to answer your question, yes, I firmly believe that they are qualified and I firmly believe they're on the right track. In fact, I think they deserve our support. I think that Uzbekistan deserves the support of us as international players. They deserve the support to realize this commitment. I hope that begins to answer your question at least.
Okay, thank you very much. We really need to end the discussion too, but yeah, Umida, your thoughts definitely on this. So what do you think about the Uzbekistan strategy? And Yunus also said that they are on the right track, but they also need our help. So I believe you guys are willing to help them. So
yes, unfortunately, I see that there is a fear of serious reforms and to provide the serious reforms in agriculture, which means that this would start with land reform and the agriculture sector itself. So we have said many times that farmers should be given the opportunity to choose what they plant. They should be relieved from having to fulfill the quota and just allowed to pay taxes like in other countries. They need to be protected from threats of confiscation of their land. As if farmers are given like ownership on their land, they feel that they can invest more and develop it accordingly. And when we talk about forced labor, we usually tell about the many people, like employees of different organizations mobilized to forcibly to pick cotton. But of course, the situation of farmers is the maybe a root of the problem, because for many, many farmers to grow cotton is simply not profitable. That's why they don't have enough money to attract enough voluntary labor. And knowing this, the heads of the regions, hakims, just forcibly mobilize and send employees of organizations to work on these farms. And this is the paradox, actually, in the country with such a high level of unemployment. We see that government use the people who have their jobs already to go and pick cotton.
Okay, thank you, Umida Niyazova, Director of Uzbek-German Forum for Human Rights, Yunus Astroop, ILO's Chief Technical Advisor in Uzbekistan, Laziz Omilov, the Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek Services Cotton Project, Pakhtagram, Bruce Spanier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kishlok Awozi blog, which focuses on Central Asia. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.